keep the community safe. I live here. Mm-hmm. I want to be safe. Yes, do the things you're doing. And you believe. Mm-hmm. She said the hard work of APD. You believe that these people have done the work.
Yep.
And that you are bringing this indictment because you are ready to prosecute it. And then.
Yeah.
Throwing 18 months away. Later, you're like, what the? Girl, you could have kept this. What you was doing?
Now, if you're not ready, then go ahead and tell me you're not ready.
I object to you getting records. You've been intrusive into people's personal lives.
In other words, the car didn't hit him. And he wasn't hit by the car.
I'm not a lawyer, but...
Are y'all keeping up?
I'm not a lawyer, but...
The debrief.
Hello and welcome to another episode of I'm Not a Lawyer, But
I'm all shook up.
It's gonna be an episode like that today. Is that what's happening?
I'm all shook up.
Now it's in your head. All right, let's run this. Let's do this again. Hello and welcome to another episode of I'm Not a Lawyer, But
The Debrief.
I am Melanie, aka Mel, aka I'm Not a Lawyer, But on many a platforms, and I am joined by my co-host.
Goosebay, how y'all doing?
And we are not lawyers. We're not legal experts. We don't work in the legal field at all. We know as much as you know. Mm-hmm. And yet we get on this podcast and talk about what we do know every week. And hopefully when you guys are tuning in, you enjoy it. And you come back and you share it and you tell people about it. So we've been having guests for the last couple of episodes, which has been
amazing.
Really enlightening and gotten a lot of good feedback from people. I've gotten some DMs and messages of people saying, I was a juror and I want to talk about it too. Mm-hmm. So I am working on some other types of people to join us. There will be a guest next week that I'm very, very excited about. But this episode this week is the two of us. And we yes. are going to talk about, we have a few things to talk about. We're going to talk about YSL, because it's been chaos, because it's always chaos. Mm-hmm. And then we also are going to talk about a case out of Kentucky, Letcher County, Kentucky, in which a sheriff shot and killed a judge in the judge's chamber. And there was a hearing this week. So we're going to talk about that, but we're going to talk about something that's like adjacent to it. So the whole point is not to talk just about that, but something else that's kind of happened out of that. But before we do that,
let the people know.
Last night, something premiered on Hulu, and it included I'm Not a Lawyer, But.
Mm-hmm.
So watch with me. Enjoy this very cool moment that I can't believe is real. I mean, it's not like massive. It's not an episode about me. But the fact that I was included is very, very
it's
cool.
Massive.
So anyway, watch with me. I hope you enjoy this very quick watch party.
Oh, this one. Let's make it full screen. Let's hit play.
I hate to ruin your Monday, but this is apparently a lie. We know it. We love it. It is the blind side.
I'm not a lawyer, but I read the 15-page petition from Michael Orr against Sean and Leanne Tui. He alleges that they and their children have now made millions of dollars based off of his name and his story, and Michael has made nothing.
The petition accusing the Tuis of negotiating a movie deal where they would reap millions, while Orr received nothing. Alleging the Tuis only negotiated...
So this is it right here. Don't look at my watch history, okay? But it is on Hulu. It is Impact by Nightline, Behind the Blind Side, Tackling the Truth. So it is, again, an Impact by Nightline episode that is now live on Hulu. And I'm not a lawyer, but I was included.
So tell us, how did that come about? Did someone call you? Did you reach out to them
I should give a little bit of context. If you're unaware, that is the movie The Blind Side, which came out years ago about the football player, Michael O'Hare, who the whole story is that he was this black boy who was not smart and had no family. And then this like white family, Sandra Bullock, it played the mom, and they come and adopt this boy and help him. And he becomes this NFL player. And it's like amazing. Mm-hmm. And so a while ago, he sued that family saying that he was actually never adopted. It was a conservatorship that he did not know. That's what it was. He thought he was adopted. And in addition to that, that from that movie, they sold this, the rights and, you know, to this movie, and they got paid and he got nothing. And so he was suing. They in turn said that he was just trying to extort them, and he was clear about what it was. It was a whole thing. And so I made a video in the early days of, hey, this is what happened. And so like last week, it wasn't even that long ago that it was an email from an ABC News producer. And she was like, hey, we came across this video of yours. Do you mind if we include it? And I was like, girl, sure. I don't care. Yeah,
put it in there.
Go ahead. In my mind, though, it was going to take a while for it to go live. Mm-hmm. And then last night, somebody DM'd me on Instagram and with a screenshot and was like, I was watching TV. And I said, not Belle on my TV. And then she sent me the full video. So it was very, very cool. So anyway.
I'm talking about they got you in the, you got plenty lines.
Apparently, I was right, because what I said right after that, the narrator said the same thing. So go check it out if you haven't, even if it's just to watch me. It's about the 6:20-ish mark. Like it's like, you know,
6:20-ish.
Like 5 seconds. It's not very long, but it is very cool. And I am very excited to start Q4 off.
You got people that sit on set Hulu for hours and hours, and they scene gets cut. Crazy. And you got 5 seconds. That's great.
Yes. Very cool. So anyway, I just wanted to start the episode off with that. So I'm very, very excited. Not starring, Attorney Starr is in the building. Hello.
Also, the documentary, the entire story is very interesting.
It is.
So you should watch it anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Now let's transition to YSL, because YSL has been a lot. And I was very close to believing that there was going to be a mistrial on Monday. I thought it could happen. Mm-hmm. And just to give you a little context, I want to play the clip, but just to give a little bit of context before we play it, is that, as we know, this case is, it's a day 140. And two people that we have heard about a lot is ADA Sprinkle and Detective Gaither. I mean, every witness has talked about Gaither and Dennis and Thorpe being the detectives that they have talked to. I mean, you can go from Woody has mentioned their names to DK to like everybody. And you would think that those witnesses, Sprinkle, Gaither, Dennis, they're going to be so key to this trial, to being able to lay out what actually happened and how it happened. A little pivot is, if you watched any of the Young Dolph trial, that investigator, the lead investigator, literally walked through. He walked through arriving to the scene of where Dolph was shot and killed, and then walked through his process like going backwards, right? I arrive and I have to figure out how did this happen. So I have to work backwards. So he talks about, okay, we're on scene and we get the video surveillance, and then we get a tip. That tip leads me here. And then once I get there, it leads me to the car. And then I get fingerprints from the car, and that leads me to a name. And that name leads me to that person where they live. And then I get surveillance from where they live. So it's like this process of working backwards.
Yep.
And so when you get lead investigators on the stand, that's what you expect to happen. Mm-hmm. You expect for them to walk you through in a way that you can follow. I see how y'all arrived at this person committed this crime. And I agree with you. They did commit the crime.
And here's the paperwork to match.
And here is the physical evidence, right? Here are the phone records. Here is the video surveillance. Or sometimes it's circumstantial. That happens as well. But you think that that is what would happen. That's not what's happening in this trial. And so all of that to say, ADA Sprinkle, okay, is on the stand. And again, you're thinking he's going to be key. And Attorney Love messes it up, because One of the things that they put on screen is a screenshot from Instagram. Okay. And in this Instagram post, there are comments. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's what you have to know about comments from Instagram in a trial. The defense objects to it a lot because it's hearsay, right? You have these comments on the screen. The people who wrote the comments are not here. And in addition to that, I don't even know who actually, if the person who owns the account actually wrote the comment. Mm-hmm. My child, McKinley, goes on YouTube under my name all the time and comments on people's videos. So for you to put a comment up, right, and in a way you're showing as if it's truth, mm-hmm. and you have done nothing to authenticate, to show that these comments were actually done by these people. And in addition to that, there is the defense would have a right to cross-examine the people who commented if they said something that is against their defendants. So anyway, that's essentially what happens. Sprinkles on the stand. There's this Instagram post up and it has comments. The defense objects. Mm-hmm. And so they go meet with the judge. And in this sidebar that we don't get to hear the public, apparently the judge says, are you offering any of the comments to be fact, to be truth?
Okay.
Attorney Love says, no, I'm not. We don't care about the comments. That no, we're not offering these to be true. And so she says, okay, it doesn't matter then. Y'all can go proceed. And then she goes back and then she asks the witness, ADA Sprinkle, about the comments. After she just told the judge, no, we're not. We don't care about those. And then she asks ADA Sprinkle, there's a phone number in the comments. And she essentially asks if that phone number really belongs to the person it's alleged to have belonged to. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes chaos. Yeah. Did you follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure that you're following, because what I'm going to play you now is what happens after that and why I thought it was going to be, we could have been on the verge of a mistrial. Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't understand how she tells the judge to her face.
Well,
this, it doesn't matter. We're not concerned about the comments, but then go ask the person
about
the comments. And then once people hear the jurors hear this.
Oh yeah. This is in the don't hear the judge yelling at her, but they hear the exchange. They hear her
questions about the comments.
Yes. And I think the clip may start with that. I'm going to play the clip. Here we go.
Was it that made the number in this post significant to you?
Well, I was looking for a number for Justin Cobb.
And what led you to believe that this number was a correct number for Justin Cobb?
It was posted in this Instagram comment.
After seeing this
Your
number,
Honor, I have a motion, please. May we step up?
Yeah.
That's my well, first of all, my motion is a motion for mistrial based on the actions of the prosecutor. My objection initially to the item was that it contained hearsay. The state represented at the bench that it was not hearsay. There was no hearsay contained in it. We did not address the issue of what the state already knew, which is that there was a phone number attached to it that she was going to try to elicit testimony from this witness about who that phone number belonged to.
May I respond?
You may.
First, the state objects to a mistrial. Second, Your Honor,
I'm just going to pause it really quick because this is the Instagram post. And if you see the third from the bottom, comment, there's a phone number.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what we are talking about. The account is, you'll see at the top, the account that this is posted on is Free Duop, mm-hmm. who is Justin. I can't think of his last name right now, but he is one of the co-defendants mm-hmm. in this. And he is alleged to be a part of the Donovan Thomas murder. He's one of the people who is charged with that in the indictment. And so the fact that the comment with the phone number was posted by the account holder, mm-hmm. typically would assume that this person, Free Duop, comments, and that phone number is probably his because he's in response to somebody saying, where you at? So then he's Atlanta, and then he's putting the phone number.
Yeah.
So that's essentially what she's trying to get at. But again, the problem is that has to be validated. That has to be authenticated.
Yeah, that could be a scam, lay
regular
all type
person in the regular street, we can do what we want.
Yeah.
But in a trial, in a court, you can't just say stuff. You gotta, you can't, that's not how this
that's
works.
That's common sense, though.
Well, not so common.
Mr. Adams indicated that he did not want on here were The comments with
okay. The comments generally being all of the writing on the right side of the picture.
Your Honor.
And so I said to you, is any of it hearsay? Is any of it being offered for the truth? And you said, no.
Your Honor, what I was asking the witness to do is to tell what was of significance to that number and what he did in terms of finding out and corroborating information that he obtained, because he obtained phone records. I don't intend that this evidence or this exhibit will prove or show that this is Justin Cobb's phone number.
You're asking him that? And no, Your Honor,
you
represented
at
the bench that none of this, that being the writing on the right side of the picture, which we're all squinting at because it's tiny on the piece of paper. And so I am relying upon you to actually be honest so that we can deal appropriately with the evidentiary issue. Was any of it being offered for the truth? And you said no. And then you turned around and after it was admitted over the overruling of the hearsay objection based on the representation that nothing was being offered for its truth, you drew the witness's attention to the phone number and tried to have the witness testify to whose phone number it was. If that is not offered for the truth, what is it? I mean, I don't want to malign the prosecutor standing in front of me right now. Listen. So I'm not going to say the possible things that it could be, but it is baffling to me that somebody with the number of years of experience that you have, time after time after time, continues to seemingly purposefully hide the ball to the extent you possibly can for as long as you possibly can. And I really don't want to believe that it is purposeful, but honestly, after a certain number of times, you start to wonder how it could be anything but that, unless it is just that you are so unorganized that you are throwing this case together as you try it. And I am sorry to say that. But this case is being made much more difficult for everybody because of the haphazard way in which it is being presented. I'm going to take a recess for a few minutes. I'll have a ruling when I get back. All right, I'm going to deny the motion for mistrial. It's not as if the state couldn't have gotten the testimony in an appropriate way anyway. It's not like the testimony itself is that big of a deal.
So I wanted to add that last part because she did deny the mistrial. But I mean, watching that was, first of all, so intense.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, she said, I don't want to malign the prosecutor standing in front of me. That sounded like a couple curse words in there, but mm-hmm. she was trying to restrain herself. The woman had to get up and take a break. I mean,
because love is testing, keeps testing the water, keeps testing her.
And here's what I need to say this because it makes me really sad. Okay. I don't like to, at least not publicly, and y'all can be mad at me, but this is my truth. I don't like to publicly
bash
people who look like me. Okay. Mm-hmm. That is not a thing I enjoy doing. Okay. Women, and especially Black women, because there is a struggle in this country if you identify as one of those. So it is never something I enjoy. However, attorney love makes it really hard.
Yeah,
The way she has handled the case, the thing she has done very clearly,
mm-hmm.
it makes you struggle to like, girl, I don't, literally, like the judge said, how is this anything but intentionality? Like, girl.
Yeah, buddy. That sounded just like your parents just scolding you.
Because you're pissed that you are messing.
You have to sit there and take it because you are completely wrong.
Yes. Yes.
I just asked you if you did this. You said no. Yeah. Now you're telling me, oh my goodness.
Yes. It is so hard to watch this case.
On the level she is doing it.
Exactly what the judge said. The amount of years of experience that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that this is a massive case. These men are in jail.
Yeah.
While you are just walking through and throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks. Mm-hmm. And I think we had the prosecutor from the Alec Baldwin case on.
Yeah.
And she said something I will never forget. We are not, as prosecutors, you are not an advocate, mm-hmm. right? You are someone who is just fighting for justice.
Yeah.
Right? Like you're not, you are fighting for justice. And whatever that justice means or looks like, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that everybody that you think did something actually did it.
Yeah, it's guilty.
You have to work through, investigate, see what the investigation tells you, and that's what you prosecute.
Yeah.
But to think that, yes, and one of the Patreon comments, and there are jurors, these poor, poor jurors.
Our last guest said he was on the jury, what, for 4 days?
Yes.
And it was long and hard.
And that
he
was
called
hard
4 days long and hard.
And so to think that these poor jurors have been on this trial for this long, this is bad.
Man.
This is bad. So anyway, I wanted to talk about that. It obviously didn't result in a mistrial. The case continues on. And then today is Thursday. We're filming this. It'll be out on Friday. But then yesterday, which was Wednesday, Detective Gaither, okay, the other key detective investigator on this case, is on the stand for the second time. This is the second time that she has testified. And during her testimony, there are a couple of remarks that we, the audience listening, mm-hmm. hear on the mics. So I'm going to play that. And the first one actually is a comment by Attorney Love. So.
Court voice. I mean.
I'm going to rewind it because I want you to hear.
I'm going to argue with the court voice. I mean.
Did you hear it? I'm going to play one more time. I hear. So why are you still talking? Okay. So the context is Max Schart is having a back and forth with the judge, and the judge has made a ruling. And then Max Schart says, I'm not trying to argue with the judge. And then there's some muttering from Love, who I believe says, so why are you still talking?
Mm.
So listen.
I'm trying to argue with the court, boys. I mean,
you hear it? You hear it? No. So after that first one, the following clips are from Detective Gaither on the stand, who is being questioned by the attorneys, and she proceeds to have numerous things to say, and it's ridiculous. So enjoy.
Horrible. I want to go back to the original question I asked about.
Horrible.
Did you hear them all? There's a horrible, there's a this dude, and then there's a this dude is horrible. And so what happens is Keith Adams, the attorney, the co-counsel for Jeffrey Williams, says something. He says, judge, they are saying stuff, basically. And the judge is like, what they said? I ain't hear nothing.
I'm sitting right here.
Well, and which makes sense because the cameras are plugged into the mic. So we are hearing that feed.
Mm.
The judge is just in a room. You know, if Leah, the producer over here, if she says something quietly and I don't have this earpiece in, I may miss what she's hearing. Mm. But if you have the earpiece in, which is what we essentially do by the live stream, you will hear her clearly.
Yeah.
And so that's essentially what it seems like happened. But I mean, it was bad. It was bad. And this was yesterday was insane.
It's like they want a mistrial. They're trying to egg on a mistrial, acting the way they act.
Goad? Are they trying to goad a mistrial? Go ahead. Sorry. That's why
What goad mean? That's a vocabulary word?
That they keep trying, they being the defense, mm-hmm. have motioned for a mistrial on the basis that they believe the prosecutors are goading a mistrial, them into a mistrial. Okay. Yeah.
Has to be that.
Yeah.
Because how are you? Oh, man, shut up. Why are you still talking?
Yeah. And I think here's the other thing that I think is important to raise here is that hostile witnesses are not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can get a witness who may not be very friendly and may not want to answer your question. Yeah. We've seen that happen throughout this trial. Mm-hmm. Many of the witnesses have not been very friendly and forthcoming with the state. Here's the things I want to raise, and it'll be a question for you. Number one, these are all the state's witnesses. So the fact that the hostile witnesses are your own witnesses is problematic for you. Like,
they've been in law enforcement.
How come the hostile witnesses are yours? That's number one. Number two, Detective Gaither, the people who are Woody is Woody. Okay. Yep. That's the regular layman. Mm-hmm. Okay. DK and the other dude who said that he wanted to go back to the Department of Corrections. These are all regular people, some of them inmates that y'all got off the street and made them come testify. This woman worked in law enforcement for 20 years.
Retired.
Yes. This woman now has a job with a professional sports team who is also supposed to be representative. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. there's a, I believe there's a level of professionalism that is expected, right? Especially when you are hearing that this is the lead detective on the case. It makes you think of Karen Reed. Yep. When Michael Proctor is up there and he's texting about Karen Reed to the other people and talking, like, it's a level of professionalism that is expected. And so for this to be the lead detective on the stand, you can't even contain yourself. At least Michael Proctor was doing it on his cell phone. Mm-hmm. You are in the court of law on the stand.
Being recorded, though.
Being recorded and on a mic. That's, and you are being that ridiculous?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
I just feel like there's a level that we expect, rightfully so, from people in law enforcement to be professional. And that's just not what's being shown.
It's not being shown. On top of that, like you're talking about those jurors that's been here all this time.
Yeah.
And you got the nerve to come in here and act that way.
Yes.
I want to go home. Yeah. And you mumbling up underneath your breath, some bull, man. The judge, they goating it, like you say. They're going to drive this judge crazy.
Well, so, you know,
because she keeps giving them chance after chance.
She does. But two things. Number one is the judge did not admonish anybody based off of those comments, because number one, low key, she was like, it felt like she didn't necessarily believe the defense, which it was like, girl, check the live stream. But she also said that if this is happening, this is reflective of these people and that'll play bad to the jurors. Like, I don't have to admonish them because the jurors will see that and take that and they'll, you know, weigh that into their decision, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I think is actually a good point to kind of transition to is that Ashley Merchant, who is a Georgia attorney who has been seen in a lot of places, and she is one of the attorneys when Brian Steele was held in contempt. She's the one who came in there and basically checked Judge Glanville. Mm-hmm. She did an interview and she talked a little bit about the mistrial and why this keeps going and how come there isn't a mistrial and a couple things that is really just interesting. So I'm going to play that clip in case you haven't seen it. And it's just good information. And it's from Professor Nez on YouTube. So this is his video that I am playing. So if you want to support him, go to his page. But I am absolutely playing this clip from his interview with Ashley Merchant.
Then you have Whitaker come in. All these motions that were filed, I thought, legitimately with evidentiary case law to back it up, by Steele and Max Schart and Douglas Weinstein and the other criminal defense attorneys, I thought for sure we have, and I really had high hopes, I thought for sure Whitaker would say, you know what, everything that's happened in this case, what you and I are talking about and what you obviously have seen, and it's an embarrassment to use your words, I thought for sure, Ashley, that Whitaker would be, there's no way that these defendants have fair and impartiality. It's impossible. It's like, to me, it's like trying to unscramble scrambled eggs. Why did she deny? I mean, you tell me, why do you think she denied the motions for mistrial? To me, it seems obvious.
Because of the speedy trial demand. I'm convinced that the reason she did so.
Unpack that.
Speedy trial demand. Jeffrey Williams, who was Brian Steele's client.
AKA Young Thug.
Right. They filed a speedy trial demand. So that's why the case had to go to trial so quickly. So in the state of Georgia, you don't get a speedy trial unless you actually ask for it. So we have a statute that says you have to demand a speedy trial. If you do that demand, they have to try you within 2 terms of court. Okay. So Fulton County, the terms of court are 2 months. So they had to get the jury impaneled, picked, all of that stuff within 2 terms. That's one of the reasons they were kind of hurrying it up, the jury selection, which, I mean, it doesn't seem like it was hurried up, but they did.
Right. It doesn't seem like it.
I know. Well, we had some tolling because of COVID. So there was some, you know, we had some of those statutes were sort of stopped because of COVID. So they had some
leniency with
that. But essentially, they needed to have the jury sworn by a certain date. They got that done, but they don't have any time left. So if this trial goes off the tracks and it's a mistrial, they don't have any time left to retry Jeffrey Williams. So if she had granted a mistrial and she had said it was the state's fault to grant the mistrial, he essentially would have never been able to be tried. And I think that probably weighed into her decision because he's the only one that has that speedy trial. The other folks don't. But if she had granted the mistrial, yeah, it would have been really unlikely that the case could have actually gone through in the time that it needed to go. And that, unfortunately, I think had something to do with it, you know?
It seems thank you so much for, that's why you're here, Ashley. Thank you so much.
Well, and I can tell you one other thing, you know, in my experience is judges don't like to decide stuff if they don't have to. And let me just unpack that a little. If a judge thinks that the defense is winning, they're not as likely to grant a directed verdict or a mistrial or something like that, because it's a lot easier if the jury finds them not guilty. There's no appeals. No appeals. If you get a not guilty verdict, no appeals. And it doesn't fall back on the judge during election cycle. Nothing like that. So I've noticed that a lot of times where they think the defense might be winning, they're not as likely to grant these types
of things. Is there any industry that is devoid of politics?
Okay. So essentially what she's saying, right, is that Jeffrey Williams, through Brian Steele, filed speedy trial. Speedy trial, we've said before, and let's just be clear again, speedy trial is not how long your trial is. It is when it is the speed in which it starts. Okay. And so they filed motion for speedy trial. Let's get the show on the road.
Yep.
What she's saying is because that there is a certain amount of time, right? When you file for that, there is a certain amount of time in which you have to be tried. Mm-hmm. That time has essentially ran out. And so if this results in a mistrial, they will, if it's the state's fault that there is a mistrial, they'll be unable to retry Jeffrey Williams.
Ah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And the judge doesn't want that on her hands.
Exactly. And then she goes into, Ashley Merchant then goes into the fact of the judge, they don't like to decide stuff if they don't want to, blah, blah, blah. But what is key, I think, out of that second part is that while a mistrial would be great, I think because this trial is going so badly and like the misconduct is so bad. But if you finish this out at the end of this, if it is not guilty, guess what? We're done here, right? So if you do a mistrial, maybe some people are able to be retried. There's still things that can happen. But if you get to the end of this train wreck and at the end, the jurors say not guilty, guess what? We're done here.
I don't even see the jury after all this time. I'm going to be so angry. I don't care. Not guilty. And y'all ain't paying me. You probably ain't feeding me right. No.
Yeah.
Let them all go.
Let me just put up a star. I'm about to send you the link, girl. Let me just put up a comment here because y'all know I'm not a lawyer and I'd never mind a lawyer correcting me. Star is saying, technically, I believe that if there was a mistrial, then they could only retry him, meaning Jeffrey Thug, if they could impanel another jury within the same term of court, which her next comment is, which would be impossible. So they cannot retry him. If this results in a mistrial, Jeffrey Williams wouldn't be able to be retried.
Yeah.
So the other thing I just one of the things that happens, because we're kind of in this phase with Diddy right now, right? Diddy was just federally indicted and, you know, the paperwork comes out. And I think what happens a lot of times is when big cases like this are announced, there's a lot, not only is there a lot of interest, and there's typically going to be a I'm not a lawyer, but video. But the other thing to know is that you are getting one side. You are getting the state side, right? They do these indictments. They do these press conferences. They tell you, here's what we're going to prove. And here's what we, so everybody's like, rah, rah, rah. And then trials come. Okay. And in trials, the defense gets to put up their side. And so I think I just want to play the press conference from when Fannie Willis initially announced these charges. It was over 2 years ago, but I just want to, I think it's just a good reminder, refresher of where we've come from. We've come so far. So give me a second.
Today I'm joined by the Atlanta Police Chief, Chief Rodney Bryan, as well as my sheriff and our sheriff, Sheriff Patrick Labatt. We are here today about a grand jury indictment that was returned that included not just Jeffrey Williams, which is of some notoriety and media attention, but about 28 defendants that operated within our community between the time period of 2012 and 2022. It is our allegation that they operated as a criminal street gang and commenced to do havoc in our community. That havoc includes crimes of violence, crimes of thefts, crimes involving drugs. I've made no secret about it, nor any apology, that as the district attorney of Fulton County, my number one focus is targeting gangs. And there's a reason for that. They are committing conservatively 75 to 80% of all of the violent crime that we are seeing within our community. And so they have to be rooted out of our community. I said just a week or two ago, it does not matter what your notoriety is, what your fame is. If you come to Fulton County, Georgia, and you commit crimes, and certainly if those crimes are in furtherance of a street gang, that you are going to become a target and a focus of this district attorney's office, and we are going to prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law. I agree with Chief Bryant. What you see yesterday and what you will see in the upcoming months and years is the result of a lot of hard work by both the Atlanta Police Department and this office. We are proud to bring forth this indictment and hopefully to bring justice to a lot of the community who was victimized through the course you see in this indictment. But more importantly, the most important thing that we are here to do is to keep this community safe. And we believe removing these 28 defendants will keep Fulton County safer.
Well said.
Yeah, right. So like 2 years ago, this happens. And you're like, yeah, keep the community safe. I live here. I want to be safe. Yes, do the things you're doing. And you believe. Mm-hmm. She said the hard work of APD. You believe that these people have done the work.
Yep.
And that you are bringing this indictment because you are ready to prosecute it. And then.
Yeah.
18 months later, you're like, what the? Girl, you could have kept this. What you was doing?
She didn't check her people's work. She didn't read the report.
The reports that were missing for the whole time. So anyway, I just wanted to play that because, again, we've come really far from where it started. And you could see... You could watching that, at least for me. And I remember when that press conference
That's
happened.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
What?
I knew. I was like, dang, them boys done for.
Yes.
It's over.
I remember watching that press conference live and thinking, oh, shoot.
She here got we go. It. Yeah. I know if she coming like this.
It's going to go down.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you start there and at by this point, many of us are in opposition to this continuing. And again, most of it has nothing to do with them actually doing it or not doing it. Mm-hmm. For me, it comes down to everybody has the right to a fair trial. And this trial has not been fair.
Yeah.
This is not fair. And I don't want anybody to have an unfair trial. Yeah. Because if anybody could, that means I could, or a family member of mine could, or somebody I know could. And you can't unfairly, unjustly put people in jail for 2 years mm-hmm. and you can't prove it. So
that's what it is, innocent or guilty. Like, they're not treating these yeah. guys right. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. So
yeah.
Let them go. Drop the case.
All right.
And then if they drop it, like you said, they'll be able to, they have a chance maybe to retry. But if it goes all the way through the case and they are found not guilty, they definitely can't. Right. Yeah.
Well, and what's so funny is at one point, Judge Whitaker said, I believe that the state believes they're winning. And I was like, you think they think they winning?
Nah.
But I mean, maybe they do. Maybe Love and Fani particularly, because it's her DA's office. Mm-hmm. Maybe she thinks that this is going the way that they want it to go.
And you never know what the jury thinking. So
you never know. Well, we will know eventually. All right. We've been on here for a while, and mm-hmm. I want to one more comment. Star says she does think that the state thinks it's going well. That to me would indicate that they are a bit removed from reality, or that they aren't. You know what it means? They're not watching my recaps. So Love, because I know I was Exhibit F at one point. So maybe you still tuning in to the debrief. Watch my recaps, girl. I don't think this is going the way you think it's going, honey. I don't think it's going that way. So, honey, just watch. Okay, let me move on, because the other thing I want to talk about is this case out of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. A man named Sheriff Steins has been charged with first degree murder because he on camera was caught shooting and killing a man named Judge Mullins mm-hmm. in Judge Mullins' chambers. Pretty wild. But it has yesterday or 2 days ago, they had the preliminary hearing mm-hmm. in which some very like general evidence is put across by the prosecution to show that we have evidence that this defendant did this crime. A judge rules on you don't really got nothing. This it's a probable cause. They have to determine if there's probable cause for this to continue on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, this is very early steps for like a felony case. Mm-hmm. And so that is what happened. And in the course of that questioning, or that hearing, what comes out is what there has been rumors of, which is that Sheriff has a daughter. No one has confirmed daughter's age. But what you can assume based off the questions mm-hmm. is that the daughter must be a minor, because one of the questions to the investigator who's on the stand being questioned, he says that the daughter has been questioned with her parents. And then the defense attorney says, in so many words, has every time she been questioned, has it been with her parents? And the investigator says yes. So that would lead you to believe that this is a minor mm-hmm. because she's being questioned with her parents. And so it seems, okay, that it has something to do with the sheriff's daughter.
Yes.
The sheriff's daughter, and it was confirmed in the court as well. The defense attorney asked the investigator, was the daughter's phone number on the judge's phone? Mm-hmm. Investigator says yes. The defense attorney says, was the daughter's phone number dialed from the judge's phone? Mm-hmm. And the investigator says yes. So we are not exactly clear on what this dynamic between the judge and the daughter was. Mm-hmm. But there appears to be something about this daughter that may possibly be the reason that a sheriff would shoot and kill a judge in the judge's chambers and then immediately opens the door, walks out like, hey,
words were treat me fair. Right. Yeah, treat me fair.
And so we are, let's be clear, we are about to completely speculate right now, okay? We have to wait and see what happens, but for the sake of speculation, what you got to say about that?
I have two daughters, and for something like that to happen, if you all look at the video, this man just matter-of-factly just pulled out his weapon and killed this guy with no hesitation. So what he saw on that judge's phone, because what you didn't say, the sheriff went into the chambers and was telling the judge he needed to use his phone for something. The judge then gave the sheriff his phone.
How do you know that part?
That's what they said. They said that they switched phones. He had to use the judge's phone.
Go ahead.
Okay. So whatever the sheriff saw in that judge's phone, because from the story, he was saying he was trying to call his daughter. So
I think that what you're saying now is assumptions.
Okay.
It's not
assumptions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't, if it's assumptions, okay. But the sheriff did have the judge's phone.
That's fact. We don't know what
caused him to get the phone.
Precipitated him. We don't know if it was, hey, let me use it. We don't know what precipitated that, which I think is going to lead to a part of the defense.
All right. So
we have to figure that part out. But what we do know
is the fact that I got this guy's phone and I see whatever I see of my daughter in his phone.
Yeah.
For me personally, I would have to see something very graphic. I just a phone number, whatever. I'm not doing that. But if it's something to what we're probably thinking it is, yeah, I'm going to jail.
So here's the other piece that was interesting from the hearing, which is that at some point, the defense attorney, okay, they talk about the daughter. At some point, the defense attorney says, do you know, essentially, okay, I am paraphrasing, okay? Essentially, is there some history between Sheriff Stein and Judge Mullins? And the investigator talks about a lawsuit. There's a lawsuit against the sheriff's department and there's something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we got the lawsuit. And so we're going to talk about the lawsuit because these players are in that lawsuit.
Mm.
And so a little bit of context here, and I'm going to pull up the lawsuit, but what you need to know is that Sheriff Stein used to be Judge Mullins' bailiff. He used to be his bailiff. What happened is Sheriff Stein's, before he was Sheriff Stein's, okay, and he was Bailiff Stein's, he got elected sheriff.
Okay.
And so once he gets elected sheriff, he gets a replacement bailiff for Judge Mullins.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's name, I have to remember his name right now. Let me pull up the
so this helps me out because I'm thinking like, why is the judge even that close to this guy?
Yes.
So being his bailiff, they probably do things outside of work.
So when Steins, they call him Mickey, but his name is Sean Mickey Steins. When Steins becomes sheriff, a man named Ben Fields replaces him as Judge Mullins' bailiff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so 2 years ago in 2022, a woman named Sabrina Atkins, okay, files a lawsuit against Ben Fields, unknown supervisors of Ben Fields, and Mickey Steins, okay? And so here is, let's go down here just so I can tell you what happened. So, actually, this is Jennifer. There's also is Sabrina Atkins and Jennifer Hill, but I thought we were talking. What happens is that this is actually, hold on. Sorry, give me a second, because this is talking about Jennifer, but okay, so the details of this don't match the factual. Oh, here we go. This is factual allegations related to Sabrina. I'm like, what is happening? Okay, so we're going to talk about Sabrina, okay, one of the plaintiffs.
Mm-hmm.
Sabrina was arrested in 2021, okay, and she was incarcerated. What ends up happening is she gets placed on home incarceration or like house arrest. What happens is after she was released, she had a difficult time finding housing accommodations. And she could not, here we go. She could not, did not have the money to pay for her ankle bracelet, right? Mm-hmm. When you are put on house arrest, you get an ankle bracelet and that costs money and you got to pay for it. Okay.
I never knew that.
Yes. If you've ever read the Nicki Minaj lawsuit for her husband that was placed on house arrest, she was footing the bill anyway.
Wow.
Sabrina can't afford to pay for the ankle bracelet. Okay. Now, number nine says defendant Field, who again, Ben Field, who is the bailiff. Mm-hmm. He makes flirtatious comments about Sabrina's looks and body and told her that he was confident that they could work something out. Sabrina understood these communications to mean that they would receive favorable treatment from defendant Fields if she provided him with sexual favors. Mm. Thereafter, Sabrina and defendant Fields communicated on a regular basis by text message. In late 2021, June 2021, defendant Fields asked Sabrina to meet her at the Letcher County Courthouse in the evening after dark. So now he's telling her, hey, 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 meet me here. Mm-hmm. Defendant Fields took Sabrina into District Judge Mullen's chambers. So these are the same chambers in which Judge Mullins was shot and killed. This is where this defendant was taken by Mullins' newfound
bailiff,
telling Sabrina that he wanted to meet her there because there were no cameras. At this time, defendant Fields took off Sabrina's ankle monitor and told her that she would not have to pay the associated fees any longer, but could remain out on home incarceration. Between June and December, Fields met Sabrina at the Letcher County Courthouse in the evening or early morning hours, approximately six times. During these meetings, defendant behavior escalated from flirtatious comments to, you get the point. Mm-hmm. She was coerced and compelled to comply with the defendant's advances, given his position of power and that she could not afford to pay for her ankle monitor. She did not consent to the abuse, blah, blah, blah. So what ends up happening, okay, is
crazy.
She tells a friend, that friend calls and tries to have this stuff reported. And let me keep going, actually, because it gets kind of crazy. So in this, oh, hold on. Upon information and belief in December, right? We said it lasted from June until December. Mm-hmm. Certain persons at the Letcher County Courthouse were notified that defendant Fields was having inappropriate communications and or relations and were provided text messages that supported this. Okay. Mm-hmm. Upon information. Okay. So now people know. In December, he stops communicating with Sabrina in text message or otherwise he stops it. In early January, defendant Fields filed a complaint against Sabrina, claiming that she was not complying with the terms of her home incarceration. So now it's being exposed, and now he files a complaint saying, man, Sabrina ain't, she ain't been doing what she's supposed to do for her home house arrest. Upon information and belief, this complaint was filed maliciously, obviously. Mm-hmm. Okay. So keep going. Sabrina gets arrested on January 26, 2022. She's terrified that she's going to be transferred to the Letcher County Jail, where defendant Fields' wife, okay, the bailiff's wife, is employed as an officer. Mm. And defendant Fields used to be employed, okay? She has and continues to have serious concerns for her safety and welfare if she's going to be transferred there. As a direct result, she's, so this is more to do with the lawsuit, like she was scared y'all should pay her money. And then, so there's this other defendant, and there's a similar situation with her, but I just want to go to what happens with her story. Because the information about what was happening to her also gets out, and she has a fiance, and this lawsuit says that her fiance starts getting stopped. Hold on. Let me just scroll a little bit. Oh, I got to find it. Hold on. Oh, I don't see. Additional factual background. Okay. Hold on.
The internet is interneting.
Yes. So Jennifer is another defendant in this case. Okay. And similar things happen to her. And so what happens here is in early December 2021, Jennifer's fiance called the Letcher County Sheriff's Department to complain about defendant Fields. Okay. So she has a fiance and he has things to say. During this call, Jennifer's fiance spoke to the sheriff's department and notified her that defendant Fields had been sexually harassing his fiance. The person who answers the phone hangs up on Jennifer's fiance. On December 15th, Jennifer's fiance went to the department in person to now complain. Okay, because y'all hung up on me, so now I'm gonna show up. Mm-hmm. The fiance speaks to a sheriff there, and that sheriff tells him that the complaint would be investigated, and he needed to keep quiet about this while it was being investigated. Okay. Very soon after, listen to this. Very soon after leaving the department, Jennifer's fiance was pulled over in his vehicle by Deputy Sheriff Norris, who was accompanied by a female deputy. Deputy Norris asked Jennifer's fiance what the F he thought he was doing and told him that he needs to keep his effing nose out of the sheriff's department's business. Later this same day, Jennifer's fiance is pulled over again by a man who refused to identify himself by name. He's driving a red Silverado pickup truck, wore a badge, and was carrying a gun. This individual identified himself as being from the sheriff's department and told the fiance that he has stuck his nose where it does not belong and called him a liar. The individual also told the fiance that Fields was involved with people who are high up on the ladder and people he should not mess with. And then the individual further threatens the fiance. And then there's one more I wanted to talk about. A couple hours later, Jennifer's fiance was stopped a third time by another deputy driving his official vehicle. The deputy notified the fiance that there had been a lot of chatter about Defendant Fields and his complaint that day and told him that he didn't need any trouble like this. They're all barely getting paid. Is there one more? Hold on. So anyway, I don't have to go through all of them. The point is you get the point. Mm-hmm. The point is you get the point. So let me get this off screen. So in addition to whatever happened in Judge Mullen's chambers that would result in Sheriff Steins killing him, the whole sheriff's department should be investigated because it sounds like y'all are crooked anyway.
Yeah.
What is happening in Letcher County?
Yeah. And that sheriff was like, oh, you doing it to them, but you ain't going to do it to mine.
I mean, this is assumptions.
Look, yes. Karen Reed.
Okay.
Corrupt.
Oh, Lord.
YSL.
Well,
y'all tripping. We ain't going to say corrupt, but y'all are doing something. It ain't right. And now you have this sheriff's department.
Yeah.
Hassling this guy because his fiance is literally getting sexually harassed, and different officers are bullying him, so they know what's happening. So they're saying it's okay. Hey man, they ain't paying us enough, man. Leave us alone. While I sexually harass your wife.
Yes. Yes. And I believe that.
Look,
that Ben Fields is, I believe he's currently in jail for that. I believe he was criminally convicted. I believe
that officer, the bailiff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
We got to understand police officers and people of authority. They're us. They're just regular people. Then they don't have to stick to any of these laws. They're just living their life like we live ours. So.
Yeah.
That's crazy though. Let somebody do something, you and I go to the police station, and then 3 minutes later, a police officer pulled me over, tell me to mind my business. Yeah. Man, I'm following you to your house.
Hello.
What are you talking about? Hey.
Well, this is still obviously being
crazy.
Uncovered. I just found it really fascinating and wanted to share that lawsuit in particular because I, you know, believe that it just shines a light on, it seems like there's some corruption and some things happening in that county that needs to be addressed. Obviously not to the point that somebody should have been killed, but I think the motive, learning what the motive is going to be very interesting. I think obviously there are a ton of questions. I have a ton of questions about this daughter and what the relationship was between the daughter and the judge or what the sheriff understood that relationship to be. Like, I got questions. So this is one that we will for sure be watching as it unfolds. Right now, this is the last thing I want to say. Right now, he is charged with first degree. I am so curious if that is going to turn into something else, if we got to get a lawyer over here, if it is uncovered that there is something inappropriate between the daughter and the judge, is there a world in which that first degree turns into something lesser, right? Something of a crime of passion, which you were looking up and trying to understand, like, how could something be explained as a crime of passion or like that be used as a defense? And would that result in something less than first degree? Are we talking manslaughter? Are we talking, you know, something else? So that's the other thing I'm very curious about. Like, it feels very big to be like first degree. If this other piece is here.
For this man to have done what he did, I'm going for a crime of passion because
we gotta get the
I'm just letting you know.
You would
what
not
I think.
Be a good prosecutor. Okay.
I'm just letting you know
just
what
over
I
here
think.
Like you Attorney Love out here. You I'm YSL just Adrian you, Love. Look, anyway.
The way it happened. He saw what he saw on that phone, and to me, he snapped right then. And that's why it's going to be a crime of passion. Whether it is or it isn't, you know, that's how I feel. And that sheriff, since this has happened to that other, to those two ladies, mm-hmm. I'm quite sure he knows about what's been going on in that department. And
well, just to be clear, in the lawsuit, it said the Mullins was not aware.
No, I'm talking
said
about
the sheriff too. It said that the sheriff was not aware. The reason that Sheriff Steins was included as a defendant in that lawsuit was because the reason he was included is because as the supervisor of Ben Fields, mm-hmm. okay, the lawsuit is saying he had a requirement. It was his duty to ensure that his subordinates are trained properly. Okay. And once something is reported, that it should be investigated properly. And so because Steins failed to do those things, he is now also held liable for what his subordinate did. Mm.
I was thinking Steins could have known because so many officers stopped that guy after the fact. So it's like, oh, this seems like everybody's in cahoots with this. But we'll see. It's all going to come out because people do things on cell phones as if cell phones don't save things. And I'm quite sure it's all going to roll out.
Let me just put this last thing up because, listen, I love an attorney correction. Star is saying that crime of passion is a sentence reduction issue, not an affirmative defense issue. So I think it speaks more to me saying going from first degree to something lesser, like a manslaughter or something like that, I think is what she is saying here. But anyway, I just wanted to put that one up there. We're obviously going to text Stara after this and ask her the next time she's available to be here live and join us. That said, thank you guys for watching. Okay.
Appreciate you.
We will holler at y'all. Make sure you watch Hulu. Watch
yep,
the
we'll
little
let
clips.
You next
tag
time,
me.
The next time you're featured, hopefully it'll be a documentary about Hello? You.
Listen to that.
Woo!
Thank you again. Make sure you follow me. I'm Not Lawyer But on all the platforms. Make sure you join the Patreon because that's who we talking to this whole time. We chatting with them live. We appreciate them too. And where can the people find you?
Goolsby, GOOLZBY on Instagram, Building with Goose on YouTube.
All right, y'all.
Cool. Court is adjourned.
Amen.